Genesis, and we left off last time. We had studied chapter 38. I was talking to somebody about chapter 38, and they kind of thought it was really kind of, same way I did, kind of unusual that a chapter like that would be in the Bible, and you know, you kind of question why it's in the Bible. And we were discussing that, and I told them, you know, I used to take that chapter if I was witnessing to a Jew, and you don't get very many opportunities to witness to Jews, but I'll tell you what you do. If you got a Jew and then one that believes in the Scripture, and they don't read, and a lot of them will believe in the Scriptures, but they won't read the Scriptures. But you take them to chapter 38, and you ask, first of all, you ask them, you know, do you believe that every chapter in the Bible has a purpose? And almost every Jew will say, yeah, I believe that. And then you say to them, well, go to read chapter 38. And you stand there while they read chapter 38. Now tell me the purpose of chapter 38. And anybody that reads that chapter immediately is kind of astonished. What is this in the Bible for? And then you take them to Matthew chapter 1 and show them verse 3. And you can say, you're right, it does have a purpose. And this is the purpose, that this is the line of our Messiah, Jesus Christ, and your Messiah too. And so, you know, nobody's gotten saved by me doing that, but I've had a chance to witness a few times. And maybe you'll have that chance too. So chapter 38 is important, but it kind of interrupted our story of Joseph. So tonight we're going to come back to the story of Joseph as we come to chapter 39. All right, now let's pick up in verse number 1. It says in verse number 1 of chapter 39, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Excuse me just a second. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. That's where we left off last time. Remember, his brothers had sold him into slavery, and we're going to find out who he was sold to in chapter 39, verse 1. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. Now note that. Captain of the guard in Egypt was a pretty important position. I mean, what did the captain of the guard do? He was the one who protected the Pharaoh. He protected the king. And so probably what kind of man was he? He was probably a ruthless warrior. He was probably a battle-hardened hero. And so this is the guy that Joseph gets sold to. So it's probably a guy you really wouldn't want to mess with, is it? And it's probably a pretty hardened guy, probably a pretty hard guy to impress. But Joseph is going to impress him as we go on through the story. It says, and Potiphar, an officer of the Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites, that's who his brothers had sold him to, who had taken him down there. And then in verse number 2, look at how this starts. The Lord was with Joseph. Here's Joseph. And let's kind of put ourselves in Joseph's shoes for a minute, because the text really doesn't tell us what's going on in Joseph's mind. And it doesn't really tell us how he's feeling at this point, but you got to put yourself in his shoes and just think about it. You think he's feeling pretty good at this point? What's happened to Joseph? He's lost his family. He's lost his home. He's probably homesick. He's in a foreign land. He doesn't speak the language. He's with foreign people. And over, if you read over in Psalms 105 about Joseph, he's in irons and fetters at this point, and as he's sold into slavery. And so this is a very difficult time for Joseph. But how does the verse begin? The Lord was with Joseph. Now, if you follow the chapter closely, you're going to see that same phrase again in verse 3. You're going to see it in verse 21, and you're going to see it in verse 23. The point's made over and over again that the Lord was with Joseph. All right, now, a lot of people, and I've talked about this before, a lot of people consider Joseph a type of Christ, and they see a lot of typology there, because he was sold by his brothers, he was forsaken by his brothers, and so, you know, there is some fit there in this typology of Joseph being a type of Jesus Christ. But I really see more as a type of the church, more as a type. He really fits who we are in Jesus Christ and our circumstances in Jesus Christ. And so I believe there's some great lessons if you're a part of the born again. Most of you are, not all of you are. I think all of you are part of the bride of Christ, the church of God. Then kind of, you know, it kind of fits some of our situations too. So follow this real carefully. But here's the first thing. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of the master of the Egyptians. So, you know, if the Lord's with you, whether you feel like it or not, you're going to be successful. I can tell you right now, Joseph was in, he was in irons and fetters. He was sold into slavery. He's away from home. He's homesick. He's feeling bad. He's in the strange culture, but the Lord was with him and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master of the Egyptian. And then in verse number 3, and it says that his master saw that the Lord was with him. You know what? If the Lord's with you and he's truly with you, the people around you can't help but see that the Lord is with you. I mean, if you truly have the Lord with you, and as born again believers, he lives in us, then at some point people should see that. Now, you know, if people around us never see that the Lord is with us, then there might be some problem with our relationship with the Lord, and we need to check that out. Because people should know that the Lord is with you. His master saw that the Lord was with him. Now, I don't know that he you know, that word Lord is in caps, and when we see it in caps, what's that mean? That means Jehovah God. I don't think his master knew who Jehovah God was, but he knew that there was something special about this guy. There was something in his character, there was something in the way he acted that made it clear to him that the Lord was with him. And how did he see him with him? Well, look at it, the last part of the verse. It said, and the master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. What's all mean in the Hebrew? All. Everything Joseph did prospered. Everything he did. Now, let me ask you a question. I'll ask you a pointed question here. Does God prosper evil? If Joseph was doing evil, would God have prospered him in all he did? No. So what was Joseph doing? Joseph was doing good and he was allowing God to be able to prosper him. Now, what do you think some of the good things? Here he is in the house of Pharaoh. He's a slave. And so I'll tell you the first thing that he did that was good. He took the situation that he was in and he accepted it as the will of God, and he submitted to that situation. You know, I've been a pastor a good while now, and I can tell you what, the biggest problem I see with a lot of people, they will not submit to the situation that they're in. They're determined to change that situation. They don't see that that situation is where God's got them, and they're trying to constantly change that situation, jumping from one fire into another fire, or going around a mountain over and over and over again. Because they will not submit to the situation that God has put them in. So that's the very first thing he did. And in doing that, what did he have to do? I mean, here was this kid who had gotten all this favor from his father. I mean, he was treated like a king. And then all of a sudden, he's got to submit to slavery. So that's got to be, it had to be a pretty hard thing to do. So he had to submit to authority. He had to submit to the authority of his master, who was Potiphar. Now, Potiphar, again, I mean, Potiphar comes off in this text as kind of a pretty neat guy, you know. But I believe he was a ruthless warrior. I mean, he was a tough guy. But Joseph submitted to him. What else do you think maybe Joseph did? I think maybe Joseph worked really hard in whatever he was given. In whatever task he was given, he did his very best. And God was able to prosper him because he did his very... Like Joseph did just lay around and get whipped and do nothing and be forced to do every little thing he had to do. God couldn't have prospered him. And then I'll tell you what else I know for sure that Joseph was, and we'll see this later on just in his character, that he was honest in all that he did. And so, see, God was, he was doing good, and so God was able to prosper him. You know, I have people come to me and say, man, God's not blessing my job. And I think I'm just going to leave that job. Well, maybe the reason God isn't blessing it is because you aren't submitting to the authority you're under. You're not working hard. You're not honest in all that you do. And God's not able to bless you in that job. Now, I believe there's occasions where your job's just going to get unbearable and God's telling you need to find another job. I definitely believe those situations. But if you go around that mountain and you come right back to it again, then maybe it's you are the problem and not the job is the problem. And so, you know, we have to learn to submit to the situation that God has got us in. I mean, I believe God wants to bless all of his children, and the reason he wants to bless all of his children is why?
Why do you think he wants to bless us in our work? So that he can be glorified. Who's glorified in this situation? The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And the master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. And so who's glorified? The Lord is glorified in that text right there. Now, what's Joseph's reward? He gets rewarded. Things start looking up. He becomes the household steward. And that was in slavery, that was the highest position you could possibly attain. I mean, you were pretty much over your master's household. You were pretty much his chief accountant, his CFO. You handled all his affairs. You were the chief manager over all the slaves. And he might have had 1,000 slaves, so that was a pretty important position. And so God is starting to train Joseph for the future, isn't he? You can see this right now. All right, now look in verse 5. So it was at the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Look at that. He blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Who's sharing in this prosperity that Joseph's receiving? This pagan master. It says he blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all he had, on all Potiphar had, and in the house and in the field. So Potiphar gets this great blessing because, you know, that's a good reason. If you could show pagans this verse, they should hire Christians, because God's going to bless them so he can bless the Christian. I see that all the time. I know that's happened with my wife's job and the way a guy made more money than he's ever made because she's been there, and God has blessed us by blessing the owner of that company. I told you all the story the other night about Nathan praying all season that we'd make the playoffs, and that little team made the playoffs by a miracle. You think any of those other players realized it was a miracle? God, no. But I know that they were blessed because God was blessing Nathan. I got the blessing too because God was blessing Nathan. I mean, don't get jealous if your employer is making big bucks off of you. It might be the avenue God's given him to give you a nice raise, to bless you. And if you're bitter and you start not submitting, not working hard because you see your boss making all this money off of you, hey, let him make all he can make. If you make more, that's great. I believe that's what's happened in this country, and I believe that's one of the reasons this economy hadn't totally collapsed. I mean, does this country as a whole deserve the blessings that are being poured out on this country and have been my whole life? No. But God uses the blessings of the pagans are blessed along with the Christians, and sometimes it's the pagan that gets blessed so the Christian can get blessed. So don't get upset about that. All right, now, let's go to verse number 6. It says, thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. I mean, here's Joseph. He's this hardworking guy. He's submitted. I mean, he's never seen this before. He's honest. He doesn't. He accepts whatever comes his way. He submits to the situation. And so he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. What's all again mean? Everything. And he did not know what he had. He didn't even know what he had. He just let Joseph take over and account for it and do whatever he wanted to do with it. That's how much he trusted Joseph, because this guy was being blessed and he knew he was being blessed. And so, you know, let Joseph have charge, and I don't even care what what the books looked like. The only thing he knew about was the bread he ate. Whatever, in other words, anything that came his way that he needed was there, and so he trusted Joseph. Now here's where the trouble comes. And we know, most of you know the story before we get in there. Now, before we get to the trouble, and here's the trouble. Same problem a lot of us have. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. I'm teasing. That wasn't a joke. That's where the trouble's going to come. But I want to go back here for just a minute. What do you think? I kind of wanted you to think in terms of being in Joseph's shoes earlier when he first was thrown into this situation. He was thrown into slavery, and how it must have felt coming into that foreign country and not being able to speak the language and not having any friends, and all his family's gone, and he thinks he's never going to see him again, and how terrible it must be. And then now all of a sudden, God has prospered him and prospered Potiphar's house. And man, he's over everything. And that probably means he could have anything he wanted. And so he's really probably pretty satisfied at this point. Don't you think maybe that's a possibility?
I mean, he might have been totally satisfied with life at this point. And so where do you think the dream is in his mind now? He's got this dream of the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him, this great vision of power, and here he is. He's pretty satisfied with life. And so I believe he's probably pretty much say, well, that just was a dream. They were right about that. And he's probably forgotten the dream. But here's my question. Has God forgotten the dream? When God gives you a dream, he never forgets it. When God gives you a promise, he never forgets it. If it's a God-given promise, then that's a promise that's going to come to pass at some point. And so God hasn't forgotten his dream, and I think Joseph would have just lived the rest of his life in this situation and maybe been fine with it. But God hasn't forgotten it, so here comes trouble. And he's going to use Joseph's good looks, and he's going to use an evil woman to push Joseph closer to the point that that dream can be fulfilled. Now let's look at the next few verses. Now, you know, you probably a little background. You probably can guess that maybe Potiphar was a career guy. I mean, he didn't even want to care about his household business. He left that all up with Joseph. He was busy guarding Pharaoh. He was going off to war. He was probably traveling a lot. So, you know, we can feel a little bit for his wife at this point, can't we? She probably felt neglected by her husband. And so she was ripe to, you know, commit adultery. And so that's, she's going to try to do that. And she's, you know, she's alone with Joseph a bunch. And so let's read the text here. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife, now several years are passing through this. It's going to be 13 years before Joseph becomes Pharaoh. Second in command to Pharaoh. So you know, a lot of years are passing. We don't know exactly, we don't get a timetable exactly, but several years are going on, and this is going on for a long time. And his master, Potiphar's wife had an eye for Joseph. His master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Hey, you know, Potiphar's been good to me. Look, my master does not know. He doesn't even know what's going on in his own house. He's entrusted me so much. And he has committed all that he has into my hand." And then verse number 9, it says, "There is no one greater in this house than I, nor," I mean, he's made me in charge of all the slaves. I mean, I'm even over the non-slaves. And so, "nor has he kept back anything from me but you. And because you are his, and because you are his wife, how then can I do this great wickedness?" Now notice he doesn't see it so much as a sin against Potiphar. And I think he saw it as a sin against Potiphar because that's really what he's expressing in the first part of the verse. But even then it goes much greater than that, and sin against God. Friends, when we sin against one another, Joseph's right on with this. Who are we sinning against? We are sinning against God. When you break trust with a friend, with a wife, you're not sinning just against that friend and that wife, or her husband, vice versa. You're sinning against God. And Joseph realized that, and all of us should realize that. And so in verse number 10, "So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day." This just didn't happen once. Every day she was alone with Joseph. She found, or every day probably of the week, every day of the year, she found opportunity to be alone with him and press him on this matter. And my guess is, I think the text would have said, but she was ugly, and so Joseph pushed her away. She's probably a pretty good-looking lady. I mean, Potiphar was he probably had his pick. He could pick the most beautiful woman in Egypt. And so she probably was a beautiful woman. And Joseph was a young man, a slave. He wasn't a eunuch. And so, you know, he had all the lust that young men have. And here was this beautiful woman offering it to him. And so it was a very difficult situation. And it went on day after day after day after day. But Joseph resists those passages. And you got to really give him credit for that. Now, let's look at verses 11 through 16. We'll get the rest of the story here. It says, "But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, that and none of the men of the house were inside, that she caught him by the garment, saying, 'Lie with me.'" This time she's actually going to try to rape him, and I don't think she thought she could overpower him, but she's going to do everything she can. "But he left his garment in her hand, and she fled and ran outside." And it was so when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and he was running around without any clothes on, that she called to the man of her house because she didn't want to get accused of all of this. And I'm going to tell you what, this ain't the only thing. There's a great saying, and it's true, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. She had been scorned, and she had been embarrassed by all of this, and she didn't want to be embarrassed anymore. That not just getting caught and her husband finding out, I think a lot of this had to do that she had been rejected by Joseph. And you can see this in the malicious way she speaks about him as we go on through this. Back in 12, but he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside, 13. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the man of her house, she called the guards, and spoke to them saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew. Now notice that. That's the first time the word Hebrew is spoken by a non-Jew. Now, one time we saw that earlier in reference, God's in reference speaking of Abram as a Hebrew. But this is the first time you see this. And I think what's going on right here is this separation. One of the reasons, again, we talked about this last week, that Israel is brought down into Egypt, I believe, is for this separation process, this racial separation to take place, this national separation to take place, so that they're not assimilated into any pagan country. And so she calls him a Hebrew. And she said, the Hebrew servant whom you brought into us came into me to mock me, to rape me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me, and she's lying, and fled outside. All right. So it was when Potiphar comes back home, and that's where we'll pick up the story now. And he comes back home, and look at the rest of it. So it was when the master heard the words which his wife had spoken to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Now that's interesting there. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Let's read verse 20. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into prison. But not just any prison. He put him in a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. Now, I don't believe that Potiphar believed his wife for one moment. If he thought, first of all, he knew Joseph. Joseph had been there several years, and Joseph had never failed to do the honest thing. He also probably had noticed some of these passes his wife was making at Joseph. It would be my guess if she made passes at Joseph. She made passes at other men, and maybe she had some affairs along the line, and maybe, you know, I mean, all of that's a strong possibility, but I'm sure he knew that this was his wife's fault. I'm very sure of it. And I'll tell you what the main reason I'm sure of it, because he was the captain of a guard, and what would he have done that day? He would have killed him. He would have had him killed that very day if he really thought Joseph had raped his wife. The other thing is he puts him in the king's prison, which is like putting you in a minimum security prison. And so he didn't put him in the prison where when you went to, you knew you weren't going to get out. You know, he put him in the king's prison. And so I believe that to save face, you know, he had to do something with Joseph because he was married to this woman. And so to save face, he put him in the king's prison. But I don't believe for a minute he believed his wife's story. Now, here's Joseph. It looks like he's really moved into a pretty bad situation, but he's been stripped of his position. He's been stripped of his authority, and he's been put in prison, but it is the king's prison. Now, at this point, if, say, Joseph did remember his dream, what does he think as far as where he's heading? I mean, here's this guy who, just a few years earlier, had this dream, this vision from God of the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him. And he knew exactly, and his dad knew exactly what that dream, how to interpret that dream. The sheaves were bowing down to, his brothers were bowing down. He knew the numbers, and so he had it all figured out. So here he was, he's in Potiphar's house, and he might be thinking at that point, maybe he's thinking, you know, maybe through this somehow I'll gain that kind of power. That's a possibility. Or maybe he didn't care, but anyway, he gets thrown into prison. Now, where do you think he thinks he's at as far as his dream is concerned at this point? Man, it's just an impossibility.
a total impossibility. It seems to him at that point that God is moving him further and further away from the possibility of the fulfillment of his dreams. Now, that's a lesson there. You see the lesson? Sometimes when you're getting, you seems to you, you're getting further and further away from the possibility of the fulfillment of your dreams. You're actually getting closer and closer to the dream's fulfillment. See, God was manipulating all these circumstances so that he wouldn't just be head of Potiphar's house. He would be the head over all of Egypt. Okay? All right, now, let's go to verses 21 and 23 and we'll finish it up here. It says, but the Lord was with Joseph. There we go again. Isn't that good news? He will never leave us or forsake us. That's what he speaks, says about the church. Friends, no matter what we're going through, it's God. God's with us. He, no matter how difficult it is, you know what he's wanting to do? He's wanting to prosper us. You know what? There's a lesson. Was Joseph prospered while he was living a life of ease? When was he prospered? In his most difficult times. It says, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. You know what? I'll tell you, and there's a lesson there too. You ever have problems with a boss or with a relative or with a neighbor or with something? Pray that God will give you favor in their sight. I tell my boys all the time, God can change that person's heart tomorrow. You might not have favor in their eyes today, and immediately God can give you that favor just like that. Ask God to give you that. Sometimes you don't have because you don't ask. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers of darkness. And so we're battling things spiritually. We, instead of trying to battle it head on, battle it, fight it spiritually. Just like Paul's example tonight of a guy walking up without a word and paying him something he should have paid him before. You think maybe God might have whispered in that guy's heart, you need to pay Paul. Yeah, that's all God has to do. So ask for God's favor to give you favor in someone's sight, and he will do that. All right, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So here's Joseph right back. He's getting right back on his feet. But why is he giving him favor? He's giving him favor because God has put it in his heart to give him favor, but he's given God the opportunity to work in that situation. Because again, in prison, I believe he's working hard. He's submitting to that situation. He's not doing like all the other prisoners running around saying he's innocent. And he was innocent. But he submitted to that situation. And he's honest in that situation. And he's going to persevere in that situation. He had no choice. He couldn't cut and run like Jacob did all the time. And that's why God had him in those situations, so he couldn't cut and run. And while God was working out all of that brattiness that he had in him, he didn't have a choice to cut and run. God's got great plans for this man. But too often we want to cut and run when God wants us to stay right there in the situation we're in and fight through that situation. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever he did there, it was his doing. He was totally in charge of the king's prison. The keeper of the prison didn't even look into anything that was under Joseph's authority. Now, do you understand the risk he was taking? They didn't mess around with things like that. If there was some money missing from the prison, guess what happened to the prison keeper? He lost his head. Okay? And so he must have really trusted Joseph. And the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him in whatever he did, and the Lord made it prosper. Where was he prospered? He was prospered in the middle of a severe trial. All this prosperity gospel that tells you just get prospered because you deserve it is false. Usually if you're going to get prospered by God, I can tell you where it's going to happen. It's going to happen through a lot of difficulty. It's going to happen through perseverance. Because God is using those trials to prosper you, not just materially, but to prosper you spiritually. To grow us, to give us blessings of character and integrity and all of the things that he wants to work in us. And that requires that the blessings come through trials. You know, I keep telling people that how blessed we're in a very difficult time in this nation right now. Some of us are going through difficult times in our lives. And this study has been such a blessing to me. I mean, I'm kind of like Joseph. I'm confined to this text, and I have to study it harder than you guys have to study it. But it's been a real blessing to me to just keep being reminded of the fact that no matter how difficult things get around me, that the Lord is with me through that trial, and that He's going to prosper me through that trial. I mean, and we're going to have to persevere through that trial, whatever that trial might be. But he's there with us. I mean, Abraham, how long did he have to wait to have a child? 25 years after he was promised a child? Jacob, how long did he have to wait to get Rachel and get out of Uncle Laban's care? 7 years for Rachel, then 7 years more before he could get him out of there. And that his trials were really just beginning at that point. He's in a trial right now as we're studying chapter 39. He's sitting there mourning his son who's really alive. And then we see Joseph. Moses, who wrote this text, you think he didn't have to suffer to be prospered? I mean, the poor guy, he spends 40 years in the wilderness, and so he can be the deliverer of Egypt, and guess what he gets to go do afterwards? Spend 40 more years in the wilderness. Paul, study Paul. Paul didn't just go out and start doing great mission work. He was 3 years in Arabia, 13 years after that, before him and Barnabas go out on the mission field. And then what happened during there? He's prospered in a jail where he's beaten, and they get to sing hymns and stuff, beaten almost to death. But God's prospering him through that. God is able to prosper us through our trials. If there is a condition, if we submit to the situation we're in. You want a big lesson out of the story of Joseph is that he was submissive. He continued to be honest. He continued to be a godly man. He continued to work hard. He continued to do the things he needed to do no matter what situation he was in. And if we do that, God can prosper us in whatever situation we're in. Some good lessons there tonight. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, we just praise you and thank you for your word and the encouragement we get by studying these great characters of the Bible. And Lord, the encouragement really comes in studying you and just how grace, full of grace you are and mercy, Lord, and how you are with your children always. And no matter what we're going through, Lord, if we just submit to that situation and trust you, you will prosper us. I believe that, Lord, and I believe you're prospering us now, even as we pray. And we thank you for that prosperity that we have in Jesus Christ. It's in His precious name that I pray. Amen.